For professional athletes, the statistics are against them because they live in chaos. In the midst of chaos, there's blinding light, the new watch, the new ring, the new cars. You can give them the reasons why they need to save money. Then what happens is he walks out that door, pulled from so many different directions. And unless, as an advisor, you have the time to really devote energy and you have to have the patience to repeat the goals, repeat what it is you said an hour ago, it helps them stay focused.
Welcome to Head, a podcast by FS Investments, where we get personal with the people of financial services. I'm Kirsten Pickens.
And I'm Ryan Robertson. We are the co-heads of distribution at FS Investments.
Today, we're excited to welcome Michelle Marquez, Managing Director at Marquez Private Wealth Management of Raymond James. Michelle has not only made lists like Forbes Top Women Wealth Advisors and Top Wealth Advisor Moms, she also manages wealth for some of sport's biggest stars.
In this episode, Michelle discusses how she built an authentic personal brand, her inspiring work with children's charities, and the unique challenge of managing wealth for leading entrepreneurs and professional athletes. So let's get started. We're excited for you to hear our conversation today.
Michelle, thanks so much for being with us today. We're so excited to have this conversation with you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, let's just start with the fact that you are a very successful financial advisor. You're Forbes Top Women Wealth Advisor. You're a Top Wealth Advisor Moms list. You've made numerous lists and rankings. And I would love to just understand how it all started. Was financial services always something that you wanted to do?
Funny thing is, actually, it's not. I wanted to be a pediatrician, was my first choice. And if it wasn't pediatrician, I wanted to be a kindergarten teacher. So a little bit about my beginnings. I come from very humble beginnings. So for us, dreams and passions were really never discussed in our family. It's about the next billing cycle. It's about survival. It's about keeping the lights on. So as much as I wanted to pursue that dream as a child, I didn't really have the opportunity. But I remember I went to school at a Catholic school. And right across the street was Wells Fargo. And at the time, my mother needed additional help for income. So at the end of school, at around 3 o'clock, I would change and I would work as a teller right across the street. So I would usually work 4 or 5 days out of the week, closing the branch each and every time. So as far as passions, I wouldn't say that financial services was my initial choice, but I'm glad to
be
here.
How old were you when you started doing that?
I was actually 15 because I remember at the time I needed parents' permission to work.
That's
so
impressive.
She was able to sign and I was able to work right after school.
Wow.
So if you come, as you say, from humble beginnings like that and your life growing up was about survival and keeping the lights on, and yet today you're one of the most successful financial advisors in the country, where you started with having no money, but yet today you manage people with tens and hundreds of millions of dollars. How are you able to do that? What made you think, or where was it in your life that made you go, I can do that?
I think it's the curiosity about money. I knew from going to school that we didn't have much, and I knew people that had a lot. So my thinking was, what was the difference between us and them? What information or knowledge did they have that we didn't? And so I'm extremely curious about people. So I love observing, right? So I would observe how my parents would make decisions when it came to money. I would look at how other people made decisions. I was really interested in mentorship. So whether it's the president of the school or another mentor that I could really cling on to, I tend to ask a lot of questions. So I think for me, it's about understanding how money works in general. What it takes to have it and what it takes not to have it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And mentorship is key.
Absolutely.
I know that's one of your big passions.
Yes.
I think we mentioned this, but one of our reasons that we wanted to launch this podcast was to really inspire others, the youth, to come into this industry or to at least know about it. You've really accumulated an impressive roster of clients, including professional athletes. We would love to dive into that. I know you talk about that a little bit on your website, because it's interesting to a lot of people and to youth, I think, just to understand how that all works. So if you wanted to dive into that, that would be great.
Absolutely. So it's really just a simple story. I was seeing a client. I was on my way to Georgia at the time. I was seated next to a guy. He was carrying a manila folder and it was stuffed with a bunch of paperwork. And I remember him being on the phone, extremely frustrated, and he's shuffling through these stacks and stacks of paperwork. He would drop it. I would pick it up. He would drop it. I would pick it up. At the end of the call, of course, he apologized and he says, "You know, Michelle, I'm sorry. You know, I know I was such a nuisance." And I said, "It's okay. You seem really stressed." If I may comment. And he says, no, I am. You know, my wife is pregnant and we're trying to buy this house. And, you know, the people on the phone, they kept asking questions that, you know, I didn't even know the relevance to it. So then, you know, the doors closed, we're ready to depart. And I said, "Well, we have 3 hours. Feel free to pick my brain. I'll walk you through what it takes to get a mortgage. And from an institutional standpoint, what institutions look for." And those questions do make sense. It doesn't make sense to you because you're asking for money, but it makes perfect sense to the one lending you the money. So I spent about maybe a good 3 hours and 15 minutes, however long it took for us to get to our destination. And we went through the records. I organized it. I have OCD. So I organized this paperwork in such a way where when they ask questions specific for cash flow, this is what they're talking about. When they're asking for budgeting, this is what they're talking about. I circled, I highlighted, I went through his entire document and I paperclipped them. I said, "So this should be very seamless." And then we shook hands and I said goodbye. And I would say probably 6 months later, he found me because he knew who I was working for at the time. And he said, "Thank you so very much for helping me because my wife now has the home of her dreams in Texas. I don't think I could have done it. That day was so instrumental for me in moving this forward." So then I said, "Oh, absolutely. I'm glad I could be of help." And he says, "Could you do me a favor? I have a friend. He would really love to talk to you about buying a house." And at the time, I'm in investment management. I don't buy houses.
Yeah.
So I'm like, "Oh, what a bad idea this has been." So I said, "Well, you know, technically, I that's not what I do for a living, but I can refer him to someone." He says, "No, he actually wants to talk to you specifically. I couldn't stop talking about you, so he wants to meet you." And he's like, "When are you going to be, you know, in Georgia next time?" And I said, "Well, it's going to be a couple months from now." And then we set up the first meeting.
So does working, how does working with ultra high net worth clients or professional athletes differ from the millionaire next door? What demands or what expectations do they have that may be different?
Oh, and Michelle, hold on before you answer that, because you know, you are talking to a former professional athlete.
Oh, Ryan. Okay.
Ryan was in the NBA.
A long time ago.
Okay.
That was a long time ago.
Then we'll filter. Okay. We'll filter some of that. So I think for professional athletes, you know, it's really difficult for them. I know that the statistics are against them. You see that everywhere. It's difficult because they live in chaos. Mm-hmm. They're pulled from their families and they're to travel alone and by themselves. And in the midst of chaos, there's blinding light. That's acquisition of the new watch, the new ring, the new cars, right? So it's really difficult for them to stay focused. So a lot of times you could sit with an athlete or a professional athlete. You can talk about your goals and plans. You can give them the reasons why they need to save money and that they need to budget properly. And at that moment, it makes perfect sense. We can all walk away in agreement that this is the right thing to do. Then what happens is he walks out that door and he's pulled from so many different directions. And unless, as an advisor, you have the time to really dedicate, and not just dedicate, you have to devote time and energy, and you have to have the patience to be repetitive. Repeat the goals, repeat what it is you said just an hour ago, it helps them stay focused.
Do you have with those clients the, I'll say, right to police their purchases? So when they come
the discretion?
To you, when you hear that they want to buy the new house, the new car, the new watch, are you in line with them to say, "Not going to happen," or "We should think about that"? Like, how do you handle that?
So we are in agreement when I bring you on board as a client in general, athletes or ultra high net worth clients, it doesn't really matter. We are in agreement that it's a relationship. So we will talk through the goals and the plans, and then we talk about budgeting, right? So if we said we come to an agreement that your budget is $100,000 a month, whatever that number is, there's no question that I will not question how you use your 100,000. You can spend it in one big purchase or dinners or nightclubs, whatever you prefer. But when that is out and you have run out and it's only the 10th day of the month, then we also have the agreement that you can't call me for it.
Oh, wow.
Like, or if you're going to call me, you have to have the best pitch possible as to why you ran out of money and what you need it for, right? So a lot of times, you know, in the beginning, we laugh about it and then I hold them to it. So the cards will get declined. The ATM card will not work. The credit card is not going to be paid. And there's a lot of difficulty that goes back and forth. So a lot of times, it's a really tough conversation. That's why I know that there's an allure to managing professional athletes, but they really do need an advisor that can commit and devote.
Mm-hmm.
They're not just a name. They need guidance.
And the stats around what you refer to this are just horrific.
You have to care so much more than what they do for a living.
Right.
Because these people will have to live for the next 30 or 40 years based on what you're able to do. And if you don't have what it takes, it's okay to say, I honestly don't have what it takes to do a good job for you. You need 24-hour care.
Yeah.
You do.
Seriously.
And if you don't have 24 hours to devote, then you shouldn't be taking them on.
KP, I've got one more question about this.
Okay, go for it.
Do the agents, do you engage with their agents in this a lot?
You need a tribe.
No, I bet.
As many as you can possibly work with. Business managers, agents, you know, their bookkeepers, anyone, CPAs, their attorneys, as many people that you can engage to help move the dial in ensuring their success, you have to use as much of that as possible, yes.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah.
You talked about this a little bit. I want to hone in on it, just about your philosophy, your process. And if our listeners were seeing what we're seeing right now, they would see that you have probably the most beautiful ring on I've ever seen in my life.
That
is shaped like a flower.
That's right.
And your website slogan is your life in bloom.
We stay true to our brand.
There you go.
The ring,
yeah.
Right?
So branding is on point. Can you talk about that a little bit, your slogan?
So when I came over to Raymond James, one of the things that I wanted to do differently, been in the business for over 20 years, is to be as authentic to myself as possible. And a lot of times you get lost in the mix, especially if you work for big organizations and institutions, right? So when we were creating the brand and they showed me several marketing standards, and they're very nice and extremely impressive, but none of them really spoke to who I am as a person. And being a woman and then a woman of color, I've seen enough to really change the way I engage with folks, right? So, for example, I want you to know that Marquez Private Wealth is led by a female.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want you to be surprised when I walk into the door and then there's a sense of disappointment when you see me walk through, because it didn't say Michael, it said Michelle Marquez. So it's always shocking to me that when I go in a conference room or when there's a board meeting, there's still that sense of what is she doing here type of look, right? So when I was
you
doing
still feel that way.
Absolutely.
Well,
it hasn't changed.
It's
especially
disappointing.
The higher you go up in the chain, the more money sometimes. That hasn't changed much. But you have to learn to adapt to it. It doesn't, sadly, it doesn't faze you as much.
Mm-hmm.
You still have a sense of disappointment, but you're always prepared to take on those kinds of meetings. So really, your life in bloom really stems from that. I wanted to add the feminine touch to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to also talk about the importance of staying in every course and every stage of your client's life. Because I didn't start my business taking on, you know, generational wealth clients only.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't earn a book. I didn't have a book waiting for me. So every single household and every single client have been from client number one, client number two, client number 10. So I built it from scratch, right? So I understand what it takes to build a practice. And a lot of times your client stays with you through their lifetime. You create a relationship and a bond.
Yeah.
And you care about the outcome, not because you want to keep the relationship because you don't want attrition. It's because they're human beings that need your help and you want to guide them along the way.
Yeah, that's very inspiring. And I've got one more question now. Sorry. On that note, where you work really matters. And you just talked about how you feel still to this day, sometimes walking in a room.
Mm-hmm.
Raymond James and their support of female advisors is incredible. I know for myself, I've worked with that organization in a partnership way for almost 25 years. And they have the longest standing women's symposium of any broker dealer in the industry going back almost 30 years. And I know you're incredibly involved in it. Can you talk about that, what that means to you, why it matters so much to you, and just how they make you, how that makes you feel at this firm?
Absolutely. I was thinking about this just 4 years ago. I've been with Raymond James for 4 years in June, right? And since then, from the moment I landed at Raymond James, I was in Forbes. I was nominated this. I was nominated that. So then I was asking the question, I said, did I get great all of a sudden on June? I joined May 31st. On June 1st, 2019, I all of a sudden turned into this great advisor? Or is it because I'm in the right place that truly want women and women of color to be propelled? A lot of times when you join big institution and organization, there's 14,000, there's 16,000 people. I'm not the look that they're looking for. So I'm buried among the 13,999 advisors. It takes a special firm to elevate you. So I think for me, that's why I love Raymond James. The Women's Symposium is not a check the box exercise. It isn't so that other firms or other people can say that we support women, but really we don't support women. I'm part of the advisory council, and I tell you, the women there are extremely devoted in ensuring that the women that join the firm or are looking to joining the firm have the voice that I didn't have for over 20 years. That's a long time. So it's not that I got great on June 1st. Right. It's just that I was buried among so many and no one thought I was important enough to be elevated. So what does that mean? It just means that you got to find the right place so you don't get lost.
Yeah.
So Kirsten and I launched Head to Head for lots of different reasons, but probably the top of that list was the idea that we wanted to shine a light to interesting advisors. And in this case, you, because we both have daughters, and we both would like our daughters to be in this industry. And yet we'll be at a conference, both of us, and we'll walk into the room, and you'll be at a conference and you'll walk into a room. And yet, I don't know, 95% of it will still be white males. And here you are, you know, a female and yet ultra successful. And yet we can't seem to get past not getting more women of color in this industry. Why is that? What can we do to fix that problem?
I think there's some sort of stigma when it comes to this job, right? That you need to be a mathematician.
Exactly.
And you have to come from money, right? We just talked a little bit about my humble beginnings, mm-hmm. not coming from money. I'm a minority, obviously, if you haven't already noticed. And on top of that, you add the socioeconomic factor of where I come from. So really, the odds are stacked against me already walking in the door. But the thing is, for a lot of the women now, we have the ability to really propel the next generation. And it's all about representation. I didn't see anyone like me when I was in this business. Or maybe I just wasn't exposed to it, right? In your darkest moments, what you want to see is someone that looks kind of like you. Because when you see someone that looks kind of like you, then you ask the question, why not me?
Mm-hmm.
That could be me. Why not me? She looks like she's got it together. And I think that's also important to tell women is that this isn't a walk in the park. There's no pixie dust. There's no sunshine and rainbows. You got to want this so badly that you're going to miss some birthdays. You're going to miss some friendships. You're going to miss some events that is meaningful to you, but you want this badly enough to where you're willing to forgo all of that. I have two daughters.
Mm-hmm.
So breaking glass ceilings is extremely important for me because I want them to see that it is possible. Even if you don't want to do this job, if you end up someplace and you don't feel like you belong, it's okay. You could do it first. That's possible. That's okay too. And if people are not able to recognize or see the value in you, you force them to.
Absolutely.
You just have to.
People want to feel relatable, you know?
Absolutely.
And so I love what you just said and the fact that I know you have two daughters and you're very passionate about children's charities too.
Absolutely.
And mentorship and education around all of this. I know you do so much there in that space.
Absolutely. You know, many, many years ago, I would say probably, well, this is my nephew now, he's 19, 16 years ago, before I had kids, my nephew was 3 at the time. I was on my way to Puerto Rico on a trip. And my sister was at home and she calls me frantically crying on the phone and said, you know, there's something wrong with Michael, my nephew, right? He's like, we're going to rush him to the ER. He just peed blood. And I'm like, that doesn't sound right. So I said, okay, call me. Call me when I get to the airport. Keep me posted. So she calls me and then she goes on to tell me that, you know, they're going to keep him overnight. They think that he has a tumor and that I could hear my nephew, you know, on the phone and I can hear him screaming and yelling, right, as a child. So then I thought, you know, this was my first trip with my boyfriend at the time to Puerto Rico. And I'm like, I'm not going. So I told the driver, turn me back around, take me to Children's Hospital instead. So I get there and I see, you know, a bunch of doctors around my nephew and they were poking and prodding. Of course, he's kicking and screaming. He's three.
Mm.
So then I'm wondering, why is blood gushing from his foot, from his arm, So then I just said, time out. So I kicked everyone out of the room. I said, I need a doctor that specializes in children because you would know that you couldn't put an IV on a kid. First of all, the vein's going to be so small.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, he's not going to stay still. He's not an adult. So obviously we're not in the right place. So I picked them up off the table and I told them, I said, you know, I'll walk outside with you. We'll go for a walk and I'll get you ice cream. And I told my sister, go find us someone that knows how to deal with kids because I'm not putting him back down on the table. So we went for a walk and finally we got around to it. So fast forward, I would say probably a week later, we ended up spending Thanksgiving at Children's Hospital. And I don't know if you've ever spent a night at a children's hospital.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yes.
It is brutal.
Awful.
It's hell on earth almost. The amount of suffering and pain that you see will get you to change your perspective in life and how so very fortunate you are that you have children that it's extremely healthy. Right. So when you walked out of there and my nephew was about to go to surgery, they were going to remove his kidney. I remember at the moment I was praying. I was praying that, you know, let him go home. There was a girl next to us that was laying there also. She was extremely sick. And during our stay, during Thanksgiving, she wasn't able to go home. Her parents left heartbroken. I'm thinking that could be us. Of course, I wasn't going to tell my sister that at the moment. I had to be her anchor. And I was thinking, you just got to let us go home. If you let me go home and you let me take my nephew home, I will come back year over year and I will not forget. Heart of Angels is about that. We started with adopting families from Children's Hospital that can't leave for the holidays, that the kids are still dreaming about Santas and their wish list. So we would get their wish list. They would mail it to Santa, so-called, but it's actually just a bunch of people like me and my sister and my friends, whoever I could rally at the time. So we started adopting people. We started with three families, then to five, then became seven. And I think our last year's event, we had about 45 families. And now we get to host it outdoors at a park, you know. So some of the patients that we do have are now with Children's Hospital, but some are with domestic abuse shelters that have found me along the way. And they say there's a lady in Pasadena that hosts events for people in need. Because I would get calls from mom saying, you know what, I didn't want my kids to know it's Christmas Day today, so I was just going to take him at the park. Can I come? I said, absolutely. Do you have a requirement? I have no requirement. There's enough food and enough toys. And if you guys want to come play, this is the place to be. So I spend a lot of time doing that. Usually like right around now, October, I usually start to focus my attention, not so much on growing the business development, revenue. It's all about this event because these kids expect a magical Christmas, right? Or a magical event at the end of the year. And then I spend a lot of time mentoring girls too. So one thing that I don't want to forget is what it feels to be me. Coming from nothing, you do feel like you're invisible. No one sees you. You're really not worth much to many people, right? So I do a lot of mentorship for inner city girls. And my goal is to really educate them so that they could see the world is a lot bigger than the house that you live in and the problems that you have. And maybe if you can dream a little bigger, you can strive to get yourself out of that place. And so I mentor about four girls, and one of them just graduated valedictorian at a middle school. So I'm extremely, couldn't attend it. I was out of town, but I was invited to her graduation. I was so proud and over the moon. She wants to be a police officer someday. And I told her I have some connections and I will definitely, you know, send her someplace or connect her with the right people. Because I think if I just had the connection, not that I would change anything at the moment, I would have liked to be a pediatrician because I love kids. Mm-hmm. But there was no introduction. My mom didn't know anybody. Didn't even go to the doctors. My sister and I laugh all the time that, you know, we haven't seen the dentist in like 15, 20 years. Like, we just don't do those things. But now we do, right?
Yeah.
Of course, we have a lot of teeth problems. But I mean, in that note, mentorship is critical because I want these girls to have better than what they're able to see on their day-to-day, if it's possible. Yeah.
As you can see, she has got me choked up here a little bit. Wow. Yeah, you're very inspiring.
Thank you.
And I'm choking up because your story at Children's Hospital initially with the IV in your nephew.
Yeah.
My son, when he was 5 weeks old, was diagnosed with pyloric stenosis. Mm. And 8 different nurses had to try to give him an IV. They ended up finally having to bring in the helicopter team. And that just, I'm reliving that moment where they couldn't find the vein because they're too little.
Yeah, absolutely.
You took charge and you made it happen.
I was actually really loud and obnoxious and I was screaming. And I just couldn't see that much blood coming out of a little child, right? Mm-hmm. And I hate needles for myself, so I can't even imagine. He was so brave.
Yeah, it's incredible.
And Michael's doing okay today?
He is healthy. He's celebrating 19. He's going to be 19 October 7th.
Wow.
So every time he volunteers at the event, that's a mandatory for him. He carries the backpacks and he helps all these people get
the things that they need. What's the date of your
event? We usually have it in December. It's a great way for my kids to celebrate their Christmas. So we usually have it a week before Christmas. We have it at a, you know, outdoor park for the kids to play, and we have all kinds of stuff that they usually wouldn't be able to. They get to pick the toys of their dream, things
that's
like that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know how we pivot to business after that.
I know. Sorry, can anytime.
But it does circle around to, is your practice single proprietary? Like, are you, or what is the members of your team like?
Yes.
How do they support you and how do they buy in, or how do you get them to buy into your charitable organization, Heart of Angels, et cetera, et cetera? Like, can you tell us a little bit about your team and how you structure that?
Managing director for my team. And what that really means is that my responsibility is really business development. It's what I do well. My team gives me the opportunity to be in places like this. Jason has been with me for over 16 years. We came to Raymond James together along with our other team members. And he has pretty much evolved his practice from being a client associate, an assistant, all the way to portfolio manager, right? So I have him to rely on. He also runs the office. He gives me the ability to travel, be with clients, do speaking engagements. He keeps the house tidy with all of our team. Then I have Diane and Janice, who truly helps me with keeping our clients happy. One of the things that we really try to focus on is to be able to anticipate your needs before you tell us about it. So their job is outreach, not just pushing paper. Pushing paper is cheap. You know, we can get an intern for that. But these people that I hire and I ask them to be a part of the team, you truly have to be a caring person. That in spite of the stacks and stacks of paperwork that you have on your desk, the moment you hear that someone's having a tough moment, everything takes a pause and you stay on the phone as if you have nothing else to do. Mm-hmm. And my staff is able to do that. And then I brought in a junior. His name is Jordan. And his primary function is really to help us with the third generation. We manage generational wealth, so we want to be as relatable as possible. Mm. At one point, I was young. Now, I'm not so young. So then I thought, you know what? We have to reduce our denominator by bringing someone younger that the third generation can really hang out with, talk to, or feel more comfortable during the meetings. So we brought him on to really help us with our clients.
That's great.
Grandkids, actually. Yeah.
I want to actually, if we can, go back, kind of business, but also tying into some resolutions for female advisors, females that are coming into the industry. I know that at the recent women's event that Raymond James held, you were honored on that last day to lead a panel about some of the challenges that women have to navigate in this industry. And I think maybe I read it right. Mm-hmm. The result of that was you leading a discussion on how best to navigate that. What are some successes? What are some difficult things, pain points, but ultimately how to push through it? Anything you can share on that?
I think part of it is you have to have the mental resilience to be able to succeed in this job. One of my favorite quotes is by Theodore Roosevelt, "The Man in the Arena." And one thing that I tell people all the time is that the arena was not built for you. So if you feel that the arena doesn't look welcoming to you because it wasn't meant for you to begin with. So when you go into these meetings, you have to be always fully prepared. You cannot take for granted that someone's making time for you. So you have to be so overly prepared that you have such conviction on why they should work with you. You have to know your value walking in there. And I know this is time. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't something that you gather, you know, year one in the business. This is something you strive to get to, right? So you have to prepare yourself that the welcoming committee may not be there. That most of the time someone's wondering why you even got invited. Like, why is she even here? Like, what has she got to tell me that I don't already know, that I don't already get? You have to be prepared to answer those questions with conviction that for a moment, just for a glimpse, they've forgotten that you're a woman or you are a minority because what you had to say was so important. Your perspective was so crucial that they can't deny not hiring you.
Mm-hmm.
But you won't get there if you just kind of wing it. Like, if you just look at my calendar and you go, okay, I have to be here, here, and here, and then you show up thinking you showing up is enough, it's never going to be enough. Especially the higher you go up in that chain where you want higher net worth clients.
Mm-hmm.
Their time is money.
Absolutely.
So don't waste it. Be prepared, overly prepared.
Absolutely. I think that's the way everyone should be, not just women too, right?
Yes.
The five P's. Proper preparation prevents poor performance.
No, didn't know that. That I'm going to have to steal that from you.
Our boss told us that one. Oh, okay. He lives by it. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. I'm going to steal that one.
Does, in your pitch that you just described, or when you're talking to a prospect and you're talking about, how much of it is you selling you and you selling your process and then investments or numbers or stocks and bonds? I'm curious because I don't want to lead the witness, but I'm curious, when you're talking to a prospect, how much of the conversation is about you? How much is about numbers?
It's a lot about me. I don't know if that's the same way for everyone. I don't know if that's the same way if it was a man that goes in mm-hmm. and you have established credibility. We have to spend so much time proving my worth to you, so much so that it's probably, I would say, a good 50% is about who I am, where I come from, the value I bring to the table, and then we segue into the same good old benefits and solutions to your problems, right? But that's why you have to get your, I guess we call it value proposition. Everyone calls it value proposition, but it's a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm.
It's your sense of self-worth. And that's built over years. And that's not something for someone new. You'll walk in and you feel so justified that you belong there. You probably are not going to, not for a while. Plenty of big meetings I've attended, I don't feel like I belong. But you just silence that. You just deal with it later. For now, you belong. And then later, you'll think about how lucky am I to be here. God, I'm so fortunate. Then you take it. But I never take it for granted, whether I'm in a podcast with you amazing people or on stage. Someone needed to hear a message, so I show up. I hate speaking. I don't know if you could tell, but...
No, you can't tell.
You can't
tell. Stage, you're fantastic.
I think I fear it more than death itself. So
it's stressful.
It's stressful, and it's not something that I look forward to doing, but I need to do it because someone needs to hear it.
And you have a story to tell.
And I have a story to tell.
I think we have hit all five senses in this conversation. It's been incredibly inspirational. You are a fabulous speaker, by the way.
Thank you.
And so we're at time. And one of the things that we always like to close our podcasts with is one question, which is...
Sure.
If you could give one piece of advice to your 20-year-old self, what would it be?
I think for me, it's about knowing when you're in a giving mentality, right? Most of us as advisors, we want to give, we want to ensure that we save everyone. You first want to make sure that who you're saving wants to be saved. If someone wants to sink the ship, no offense, professional athletes, sometimes they don't want to be successful themselves. It is not selfish to walk away. And a lot of times for us, it's difficult to walk away because you don't want to abandon. You don't want to leave someone behind. You want to do more and better for them. But a lot of times, if clients don't want your advice, then they don't have a need for you. After you have proven your worth and that the value that you bring to the table. And at the end of the day, that's not what they're looking for. It's absolutely okay to walk away. There are plenty of people that are looking for someone like you, someone that could use your help and your energy. And whoever you devote your energy to, they better be worth it, because you only have so much of it at the end of the day, right? We all get drained.
Very good advice. Yep. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Michelle, thank you so much for being on Head to Head. It was a fascinating conversation.
Thank you for having me, Michelle. This is such an honor. Thank you. I appreciate you guys.
Yeah, we appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Bye.
To get the latest episodes as soon as they're available, be sure to subscribe to the Fireside Podcast.
For more on this episode, visit www.fsinvestments.com/headtohead. This episode was edited and engineered by Aaron Sherman. Video was produced by Melissa Venditti and copy provided by Harrison Beck. Special thanks to show coordinators Laura Coleman and Ellie Zhang. Thanks for listening.
The Forbes ranking of America's top women wealth advisors best in state, developed by Shook Research, is based on an algorithm of qualitative and quantitative data, rating thousands of wealth advisors with a minimum of 7 years of experience and weighing factors like revenue trends, assets under management, compliance records, industry experience, and best practices learned through telephone and in-person interviews. Portfolio performance is not a criteria due to varying client objectives and lack of audited data. This ranking is based upon the period from September 30th, 2022 to September 30th, 2023, and was released on March 8th, 2024. Research summary, as of February 2024, 44,028 nominations were received and approximately 1,991 women won based on thresholds. Please visit https://www.forbes.com/lists/best-in-state-women-advisors for more info. Shook Research considered women advisors with children living at home under 21 years of age. The ranking algorithm is based on qualitative measures derived from telephone, virtual, and in-person interviews and surveys, service models, investing process, client retention, industry experience, review of compliance records, firm nominations, etc., and quantitative criteria such as assets under management and revenue generated for their firms. Time period upon which the rating is based is from March 31st, 2020 to March 31st, 2021, and was released on October 12th, 2021. Investment performance is not a criterion because client objectives and risk tolerances vary, and advisors rarely have audited performance reports. Rankings are based on the opinions of Shook Research LLC, research summary as of March 31st, 2021. From a total universe of 300,000 advisors, based on our thresholds, we received 33,123 nominations, of which approximately 20%, 6,624, were women, and less than a quarter, 1,400 at the time, were mothers with children under the age of 21 and living at home. A final list of the top 500 advisors was then compiled based upon the quantitative criteria. These rankings are not indicative of an advisor's future performance, are not endorsement, and may not be representative of individual clients' experience. Neither Raymond James nor any of its financial advisors or RIA firms pay a fee in exchange for these awards/ratings. Raymond James is not affiliated with Forbes, Shook Research LLC, or Working Mother Magazine.